From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 24th, 2020. Thanks to Wisconsin extending the safer at home order, I feel like a teenager again. Gas is cheap, but I'm still grounded. And speaking of gas, crude oil prices dropped to a minus $40 a barrel. So if I got this right, I fill up my tank and they pay me? I'm sure someone will explain that to me in today's podcast. The late Hugh Hefner would have fit right into today's self-quarantine. Hefner ran the Playboy Empire in his pajamas, and I'm sure many of our listeners are still in their pajamas. And I won't even mention what our podcasters are wearing today. And it's tough this year if you're a high school senior. Your prom is canceled, your date is virtual, and your diploma is a PDF. Man, that sucks. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding wrapping up the week. Here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Gave up a little bit of ground this week. NASDAQ shed 0.2% for the week, losing 16 points to close this afternoon at 86.35. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, S&P 500 shed 1.3% this week, losing 38 points to close at 28.37. Dow Jones Industrial Average actually gained 0.2%, adding 52 points to close at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 23,771. Year-to-date, NASDAQ down only 3.5%. Beauty of growth stocks, S&P 500 down 11.7%, including dividends, and the Dow, because of a few outliers, is down 16.1%. You know, Kyle, let's get right into Max's comment. The oil market did rebound this week, but it sure plunged, went into free fall for the futures contract for immediate delivery. It did go into negative territory. Hardly ever see that. Just frankly, they've run out of places to store oil. And as a result, nobody had anywhere to go with that oil. So they were basically just trying to get it off their hands. And that all has reversed course as that futures contract expired. But Kyle, a lot of people will say that as the price of oil goes, so does the economy. So it's somewhat unsettling that oil has plunged in price.
You know, I think you go back to your economics 101 and kind of think through the impact of supply and demand, and especially with demand virtually non-existent now for oil. You know, you look at, about 85% capacity reductions or more for most airlines around the world. You've got all the massive cruise ships just sitting right now, not burning any oil. And so, you know, I think as we look at kind of the typical demand side of things, there's nobody spending right now on oil. And then you look at supply, and yeah, we've made some cuts, but clearly not enough to take out the excess that was there. And so what you wind up with, as you say, is that you got to pay somebody to store that oil if it's not going to be used till August, September, October. And it costs money to buy a tanker, to rent a tanker, and have it floating around out there with a bunch of oil in it. And so, you know, that all has to be factored into the ultimate price for those people that want to take delivery of that barrel. And it meant that for a little while, at least, you were getting paid to do that. And I can guarantee you there's some traders out there who took advantage of that opportunity with the idea that, by August or September, the price of oil is going to look very different. They can turn around and put that barrel back into the market. But that's a pretty high margin for error trade to make. And, certainly I think, could see oil stay low for a very long time. And so, you know, you got to be pretty confident in what you're doing there. And that I think is a bet more than it is any kind of investment.
Well, I would agree with that, Kyle. You know, I talked to all sorts of people who said they have no intention of traveling anytime soon, even if the restrictions get lifted and we're able to circulate out and about. And I think that's indicative of what this recovery is going to look like. Fine, they'll decide that we get to go out and about, but for many of us, we're going to avoid crowds till they put a vaccine into our arms. And as a result, it'll be a long time before oil recovers. You know, if you look at stocks for the week, pretty interesting how the growth stocks have been hanging in there. Whoop, boy, you'd never see that. growth stocks doing really well, holding up much better than the broader indices and averages would suggest. It's still somewhat disconcerting to see the volatility. Big swings in the market continue through this week. I mean, look at Thursday's trading. Market was up almost 400 points, all but disappeared by the end of the bell. And I think that everybody's trying to look for direction. We get rallies occasionally when they talk about lifting some of the restrictions. We get brief rallies at times when the government decides to spend more money to stimulate the economy. And then there are days when people seem to be paying more attention to the number of infections and deaths, although that's been plateauing. There have been some growing new hotspots. So, Kyle, you know, I look at some of the forecasts by the health experts, and they're now suggesting a second wave that could occur in the United States mid-July. Yet another reason for thinking that maybe the sell-off in the market isn't quite behind us. We haven't dealt yet really with the economic news. We got the first-time claims for unemployment insurance over 4 million. We're up to 26 million people. That's 13% of the U.S. workforce that have filed first-time claims for unemployment insurance in 5 weeks. The highest ever. But you also realize that there are some states like Florida that have made it almost impossible to file claims. They're so far behind. So is California. As a result, they think the numbers are grossly under usually the true number of people that are unemployed. So I think we're, you know, going to hunker down here for a while. It's just a whole lot of people are out of work. I mentioned on last week's podcast, about 37% of the American workforce can actually work from home. Everybody else has actually got to be on the job site somewhere. So, you know, it all spells kind of a slow recovery to me, Kyle.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been good to hear some of the anecdotes from those that are unemployed that seem to be encouraged about the prospects for work once this starts back up, once we're operating in a more normal environment. And of course, the challenge is if we do see a second wave in July or sometime thereafter, you know, if this fear does persist, even beyond that, you know, I think those anecdotes may prove to be a little more optimistic than what we ultimately see. That doesn't mean certainly that, you know, we aren't going to see a lot of those people go back to work eventually, but it does mean that, you know, at least for a while, we can't count on those jobs coming back next month, next quarter, next year. We've got to kind of wait to see where we are. And wait to see what the data shows as far as when this starts to flatten out, as far as when we get a vaccine and more, I think, more studied treatments as well on how to deal with more severe cases. And so, you know, I think you're right to point out that the market has just reacted to any little piece of news bouncing back and forth, just trying to figure out, all right, what does this mean for where we're going to end up 6 months from now, a year from now? And the reality is we're still pretty early in this in terms of not just the progression of cases, but also what the ultimate resolution looks like. And so, you know, I think you fall back on that balance, you fall back on the game plan that you've had long before all this started. It gets you through, but at the same time, you know, you take advantage of an opportunity here or there on the margins, not trying to, you know, to time the market, not trying to say this is where we're headed, but just knowing that if things fall a little, it might be an opportunity to put a little bit of cash to work. If things are running a little bit higher, or if you've got something in your portfolio that's making money, maybe that's a great place to sell if you need a little cash.
Kyle, you and I spent a fair amount of time analyzing earnings, the relationship to interest rates, the two things they figured out a long time ago that drive stock prices. And the point simply is their earnings forecast for this year are really all over the map. Every time I look at them, they're very different from just days earlier. FactSet now is calling for a calendar year 2020, 15.2% earnings decline, a revenue decline of 2.3%. Seems they're kind of off on the revenue number, but the point is, you know, the S&P is down 11. You look at the 15% decline in earnings. It's kind of like the market's telling us that maybe that forecast is kind of on the money for now.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. We're in the middle of first quarter earnings season, and it's a first quarter earnings number that's going to reflect probably a 15% year-over-year decline in earnings. relative to 2019 first quarter. And the reality is that's probably only factoring in about a third of, a cut to what really is going to happen in the second and third quarters. Just if you factor in that the brunt of this virus really didn't take its effect here in the U.S. until March, you're talking about 2 months where we operated mostly normally for most of the companies here in the U.S. And so I think you look at a second quarter that's on pace to be the worst quarter since 2016. You look at kind of full year numbers, as you say, that maybe still a little optimistic at 12 to 15% decline in earnings numbers. And again, that's all depending on who you look at, because as you say, those predictions are all over the map right now. But I do think, ultimately, if you look beyond and the ability to recover some of those earnings numbers, the ability to get back to where we are on a forward 12-month basis, the S&P actually looks a little expensive right now, but a big chunk of that is just because we don't know when earnings finally come back. And so while we historically have kind of said, 16, 17 is a pretty fair valuation in terms of forward earnings, right now a lot of that data that we're basing those conversations on is so preliminary, is so dependent upon what happens with the virus that it's almost not worth looking at valuations as a singular tool right now, but as a kind of a piece of information that tells us more about what's going on in the world. And that is that, again, until we see some more clarity, we're not going to know any more about, where earnings ultimately should end up.
Well, I mean, the point specifically is forward PEs are at 19.1. And that's, the problem of using PE ratios, whether we're doing trailing earnings or forward earnings, they just go back 12 months or they just go forward 12 months, doesn't fully take into account what happens after that. So at a time when you've seen such upheaval in the economy and the markets, for that matter, the traditional yardsticks of valuation aren't much good to us. Kyle, you have to be happy that the bond market is trading a little bit easier nowadays.
Yeah, I think that's been critical for especially the investors that we work with for our clients. It's been critical to kind of, calming some of the nerves, some of the anxiety that was a factor early on in this decline. When you look at bond funds that should move in the opposite direction of your stock funds, and all of a sudden for a 2 or 3 week stretch, we saw everything going in the same direction, and unfortunately it was down. That's going to make everybody nervous. And certainly it wasn't the first time we had seen it. We know that it's possible for those things to happen. We also know that they tend to be short-lived. And what we've seen, really the last 3 weeks now is that we've returned to a more normal environment, that investors are being paid a little more to take risk in bonds, but probably not enough given some of the risk that's out there. And for that stuff that's higher quality, it's finally trading like higher quality again. And I think the one challenge we have is we're still dealing with so many variables, Bob, that there's a chance that some of those things we thought were high quality end up being hurt longer run, that takes that quality down a notch or two. And so we've got to be careful even still as the bond market trades a little bit more normally, that we're not going to just go out there and start to just buy whatever we think is high quality. We've got to remain focused, I think, on that quality piece right now.
Kyle, been getting some questions about municipal bonds here today after the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday basically said to the states, drop dead. The states had been looking for funding from the federal government to help them bridge the gap with a precipitous decline in state and local government revenues. So when you look at the municipal market, I'm encouraged by the pricing. The high yield end of the muni market sold off down 5-6%, but general obligation bonds, normal durations, about 3-4 years, are hanging in there, kind of at a break-even standpoint right now.
Well, and I think what we're looking at is that we have a pretty good understanding of who the problem children are on a state-by-state and locality-by-locality basis. You probably don't want to buy a Chicago bond right now, but if you're looking at one of the more, well-funded states, if you're looking at a state that isn't loaded up, or a locality that isn't loaded up with debt, there's still some good opportunities out there and some reasons to think that yeah, it's going to be a little bit worse of a revenue picture for a while, but that when this does ultimately pass, you know, they've got the resources to get through. So, you know, I think there's still some opportunities there. I think you look at that high quality corporate side that we talked about before, and it's a similar picture. You know, it's all about understanding who are the problem children before this, what's the potential for some new problem children to show up given the issues we're having, and, you know, how do we navigate those issues? And, you know, it's why active management in particular in your bond funds can be so critically important. If all you're doing is buying the bond index, they're just buying a broad basket of those municipals, of those corporates, of treasuries, whatever index you're looking at. And the reality is that there's a pretty big difference between some of the most attractive states, some of the most attractive cities, some of the most attractive counties, and definitely, you know, some of those least attractive ones. And so, you know, I think we're absolutely seeing that. We should continue to see that. And I think, you know, it's right, you're right to point out that, you know, it's been encouraging to see that the good stuff is holding up the way we would have expected.
Kyle, it's been a while since we talked about international investing. As you're well aware, the dollar continues to gain strength, makes it harder to make money for U.S. investors overseas. But what's also got my attention now is the sell-off in the emerging world. Been fairly dramatic, pretty steep sell-off. And, you know, so often you look at the emerging world as the people that dig raw materials out of the ground and put it on barges and ship it around the world. China's not calling them like they used to, so Australia sold off. Finally, when it's a recession, Australia had been the record leader for going the longest without being a recession. Now they are. What's your outlook for the emerging world, I think, relative to oil, relative to just across the board lower commodities prices?
Yeah, you know, I think as you look at the emerging world, the attractive story is the consumer. It's the piece we've been most interested in, because ultimately, you know, you're talking about a consumer base that has not had the disposable resources to be able to purchase, you know, disposable diapers, to be able to purchase baby formula, those kinds of things. And all of a sudden, you know, at least in many of those regions, you had, you know, consumers that were able to buy into that stuff. And as you point out, the challenge now is with material costs declining as quickly as they have. You look at oil, you look at copper, you look at all of the inputs that go into kind of, you know, the global industry. With no demand for those inputs, you've got consumers that are going to be under pressure there as well. I think that's a short-term problem. Longer term, those economies are finding ways to improve their consumers, to grow the income base of those consumers. And the challenge is for an investor, it probably means that the best opportunities to capture emerging market in consumers aren't necessarily emerging market companies. They're probably companies that exist in other parts of the world, many of them here in the U.S., whether it's a technology stock that, you know, someone in the emerging world is going to use, whether it's a consumer goods company that sells you know, those diapers that I mentioned to a consumer in parts of the emerging world. Those, I think, are the more compelling stories. Those are the more compelling ways in which we can capture that. Yeah, there's going to be some great businesses out there in the emerging world. There's great businesses in the rest of the world. I think the challenge is that they're so tied often to, you know, just kind of the global economy that, you know, right now that's going to be a pretty big challenge. And I think the other piece that you mentioned, year to date, we have a 500 basis point headwind from currency on emerging market stocks. And so, you know, you'd be 500 basis points better just buying the U.S. stock that has exposure to the emerging market consumer than you would to buying the stock in one of those countries. And so, you know, I think that's something you have to pay attention to. Yes, it adds to diversification within your portfolio. There is a place for it. But I do think that we've got to keep it in perspective that there are lots of opportunities to capture those consumers without having to overexpose ourselves to those markets directly.
Big picture, long term, last 10 years through the end of last year, U.S. stocks basically tripled, Japanese stocks doubled, European stocks were up about 64%, emerging world basically broke even over a 10-year period of time, long time. So you turn that on its head the next 10 years, you get a sense of the direction for the financial markets. I'm going to guess that emerging markets may, in fact, even lead the list. because of the demographic growth that's so strong, particularly in Asia. But I think it'll be a while yet. We're going to wait for the dollar to weaken, come down a little bit. It's better to have the wind at your back when you go into those types of investments. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.